Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the How To Fitness podcast with me, Michael Ijoa.
And me, Kate Lyman.
And we are back with series two. Kate, hello. It's lovely to see you. It's been too long.
It's kind of a nice break, but I'm really excited to be back to it.
Yeah, I'm excited too. We had good feedback from the first series. I don't want to say finding our feet, because that makes us sound like we weren't very good and that was our trial run, but I feel like our confidence has grown. I've really enjoyed doing these chats, and yeah, I'm excited for a series two to see what we can learn about and throw out the listeners.
Well, yeah, and right, it's like not like we haven't done anything in the last few months. We've been brainstorming and getting guests, and I'm like almost overwhelmed with how many awesome things we have to talk about. So I think it's a good place to be.
Exactly that. Exactly. And how have you been? How was the mid-series gap for you?
It was good. We were just talking about this. Babies get more fun, but also just so much harder. Like this morning, I was trying to put some finishing touches on this episode, and it's like hard to do with this wild little creature who can crawl so fast, and he can get into the cat food in like 0.2 seconds. Like his reflexes, it's been really hard.
Yeah, I'm with you. Jude hasn't started crawling yet, so it's like imminent. He's like pushing onto his knees, he's holding out, like it's literally a matter of days now and he's going to be like terrorizing our house. But he's got a cold, he has a cough from his last cold, he has a lot of teeth coming through, and has conjunctivitis. So it's been a fun few days for us. But you're right, like they are amazing. But I'm exhausted. I'm tired, yeah. Kate.
I know, and it's just like I don't know. I just feel like they have this laser vision for where they shouldn't be or what they shouldn't touch. It's like, I don't know. It's incredible to me.
It's so true.
And it's fun, but it's exhausting.
Yeah, it is. And Jude, because he can't crawl yet, but he can roll and kind of push himself backwards with his hands very effectively. So you put him down, turn around, and literally like 5 seconds passes and they've vanished. Like, where has the child gone? Right under the sofa. So yeah, they keep you on your toes.
I was just going to say, keeping us on our toes.
Yeah. And also, we have a lot less hair. You've had a lovely haircut, very short hair. I have shaved my head. So
season two, hairless.
Season... Do we need to change the name of the podcast, like Hairless Fitness or something? I don't know. Yeah, it's which kind of here. Does this tie into the topic we're talking about today a little bit? I think so.
I think it does. And I'm going to quiz you on that a little bit. So
cool.
So, okay, we've been laying out a lot of topics, right? Like there's a lot of things we wanted to deep dive into. And in this second season, what'd you call a series? Season, whatever. Of How
I said
to
series,
fitness.
But yeah.
Whatever. This one I keep coming back to over and over is anti-aging messaging that we're bombarded with just absolutely constantly, and what actually contributes to our health and longevity. So that's what I want to talk about today. And in true Kate fashion, I have like dozens of pages of notes and about 50 tabs open on my computer, and I've written 10 pages of script, single spaced. It's too much. I don't even know how we're going to get through all of it. Because there's just so many ways to approach this topic, like from the wild world of anti-aging products to kind of the lengths that people go to look younger, to this horrible idea that women are disposable after a certain age, which I think definitely plays into this topic, and to the frequency with which we overlook factors that actually contribute to our aging. So today I want to talk about our societal obsession with aging. The fad diets, the overpromising products, the rampant misinformation constantly flung around, the pseudoscience, and where we get it right as well as where we get it wrong. I want to talk about the valid, very valid desire to feel healthy and well as the years go by, and what healthy aging really means, as well as what we can actually do to promote longevity. So if you're new here to How to Fitness, welcome to season two, series two, episode one, series two, whatever we're going to call it. Welcome to the podcast. And in every How To Fitness deep dive we do, we spend a lot of time, right? We like research and write and create and share a lot. And our goal is to help you, the listener, and ourselves become more informed consumers. So we obviously share our opinions and thoughts along the way, but I really always try to do my best to share as much evidence-based information as possible and ensure that we're not adding any nonsense to this world that already has far too much nonsense in it, right? So
yeah, when you suggested this topic, I was down for it straight away. I thought it was a really, really cool discussion point. And it's something I get asked about quite a lot on social media. So it'd be nice to be able to signpost towards an episode where we do bust a lot of the myths around it. And yeah, I'm sure there'll be some very cool discussions along the way. So I'm looking forward to it. I just realized as well, I haven't opened my drink, which makes for very good ASMR. Is that the word?
Yes, let's do it.
That's good. That's a good sound.
Really good.
Oh, do we get the pour as well? There we go.
That was what lovely. Treat.
Yeah, maybe we need
so
like an
great.
We need like an ASMR point on every episode.
I'm down for that. Okay, so I want to start by sharing this pet peeve of mine. Okay, so like it's weird because it's a pet peeve, but I've also been guilty of this myself, so I don't really know what to call it. I don't know. It irks me. And I don't know if you feel this as well, but I get so bothered by young people complaining that they're old. Like, I know I've been guilty of this too, but do you know what I mean? Like, I just turned 30 and then automatically my Instagram was showing me these memes of like, you know, when you're 30 now and ibuprofen's your best friend or whatever it looks like. I don't know. Your knees crackle when you bend over. I don't know. How do you feel about it? Do you get peeved by that too?
Yeah, I do. And I think I get annoyed when people our age do it as well. Like, I think we're all kind of guilty of it. I know there's definitely a point where I think like early mid-20s, you kind of feel like you've got past that. I don't say like childhood stage because you've been like a teenager and stuff. You're not a child. But yeah, it kind of feels like you're entering into early adulthood and you can feel like, oh, I'm really old when you're not. And I think even when people do it when they're in their 30s as well, it really annoys me. Although there is a very good Instagram page, which I think is called 30AF. I don't know if you follow it on Instagram.
I don't. I'll have to look it up.
I think that's what it is. If it's not, I apologize if I got it wrong. But yeah, it's just kind of memes about getting a bit older and joints hurting and stuff, which a bit of tongue in cheek is fine. But yeah, when people really moan about it, please stop.
Well, I feel like quite often I'll have someone like apply for coaching with me for nutrition coaching, right? Because that's what I do as my job. And they'll say, you know, like, I don't know how to navigate this as I age. And they're like 34. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you're so young. 40s, yeah. You're young. 50s, you're young. You know, like, you have a lot of life left to live. Which, side note, I know there's not a lot of TV time with these babies we have, but have you watched the show Naiad on Netflix, or have you seen it at all?
No, I've never heard of
it. Okay. So good. I just finished it last night. It took me 3 days to watch, like a little bit at a time. But it is so good. Okay, yeah, all I'm going to tell you is this woman does something amazing, and she's 64, and she swims from Cuba to the Florida Keys.
Which is a long way.
Which is 110 miles.
Nice.
It's never been done before, and she does it at 64. And, you know, all it takes is watching something like that to be like, well, 64 isn't that old either. Because it's not, because there's so much. I mean, we're not all of us are going to go ahead and do that. Like, we're just, you know, break that bubble here and now. But there is so much life to live. So when we're treating 30 as old or 40 as old, I feel like we're not giving ourselves enough credit, you know?
Yeah, completely agree. I think it's probably just the way that we're targeted health and fitness advice as well, isn't it? Like, we're told that we're kind of over the hill once we hit our 30s, and these are the supplements you have to take and the workout routines you have to do and avoid this exercise. You must do this exercise, and it just becomes so massively overcomplicated, and we write ourselves off, and it's not necessary.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's talk about this societal pressure for eternal youth. And I want to start with a question for you, Michael. So can you remember the first time that you kind of felt pressured to like not age as quickly, or maybe to fight your aging?
Oh, good question. I mean, I would just bring it back to shaving my head that I did recently. I feel like that was kind of the first time where I was maybe like, oh yeah, we're getting a little bit older, not old once again, which I want to reiterate, getting a bit older. And I know that so many guys get really hung up about their hair and shaving it. I don't know, to me, it didn't actually feel like that big a deal, but I know that some people do find like, oh, they could put it off for quite a while, or say that, oh, maybe I should have done it a few years earlier than I actually did. And yeah, me shaving it, it's so funny. All the targeted ads I get now, because I posted about it on Instagram, all my adverts now are like hair loss adverts or like clinics of how I can help regrow my hair. And yeah, this is kind of the first time where I've hit that point in my life where, don't know, I feel like this, is it a pressure? Yeah, it is, I guess. Or I feel like society's telling me I need to have an issue with it when I actually don't. And that's the weird conflict I've got going on at the moment.
Okay. Yeah. So hair loss. I feel like that's probably a big one for guys, right? because it's just a little more prevalent in that space. Okay, to flip the script a little bit, that experience is a lot younger for me. You're 33?
Okay. Yes, 33. Yeah.
I remember my first college roommate. So I'm university, 18 years old, right? Like telling me, like, you're not already using anti-wrinkle serum? Like, come on. Like, you need to be using that right now. And I remember being like, oh my gosh, what? And
when you're 18?
Yeah, I'm not a makeup product girl. Like, it's just not something I'm interested in. So like, I remember going to Walgreens or some type of drugstore and looking for some like anti-aging moisturizer and being so overwhelmed because there's like aisles and aisles of it. And I think I remember calling my mom like, need to be using moisturizer? And I'm pretty sure she said yes, actually. Yep. And it's just like a different kind of pressure for females. Throughout all of this conversation, I don't want to give the impression that like this is only a pressure on women or those who identify as women, because it's not. It's totally not. But there's more, right? I feel like we can agree there's more pressure, yeah. Or at least that pressure comes on sooner. And, you know, maybe like this could be a huge generalization, but it feels like women are bombarded with like the physical attributes of youth. But then like, you know, and that's like all this targeted ads. But then like, rich billionaires are out here trying to like live to be 200 or something, like in some time capsule in space. Like the idea of anti-aging looks different between the two. Now, there is this really fantastic New York Times article I read, and I think it was actually a few years old. I think it was from 2017. I'll put it in the show notes. I read it while prepping this episode, and if I had time to quote the whole thing, I would, because it was really good. But since I don't, I'll add it to the show notes. I do want to share a few short excerpts, and a lot of it pulls from Susan Sontag's essay on the double standard of aging. And this article says, the only real solution to aging is, of course, death. But our central mode of dealing with that inevitability is to delay and deny it. In this culture, to age is to be erased, to be deemed irrelevant. For women, it also means being turned from a coveted object into a disposable one. We spend our lives fighting our own disappearance. Corporate interests have discovered that they can make a killing by selling coping mechanisms. It's not just the elixirs themselves. The images, the celebrity spokespeople, the branded jargon and sales copy all work towards the same goal. They must paper over large and naughty things, our discomfort over our own morality, our deep-rooted habit of valuing women largely in terms of their attractiveness, our growing sentiment that both ageism and gender roles ought to be things of the past, with a cheery promise that a face cream will help. So I think we could very easily do a whole episode that delves into like this rabbit hole of why do we value youth so much? Like, is it fear of death or social stigma, or is it like this loss of purpose? But I want to focus less about the existential crises and more about the value placed on youthful appearance. This idea that youthful looks are ideal and looking our age is bad, and the huge role that anti-aging industry plays in this messaging, as well as the financial incentive of perpetuating the idea that young is good. So I'm going to talk about Dr. Jen Gunter real quick, because she had a post that really resonated with me. And for backstory, Michael and I are trying so hard to get Dr. Gunter on this podcast.
We're going to do it. We're going to do it. If anyone listening has an in, if they're close with Dr. Gunter, please reach out and let's get her on the podcast, because we both love her work and we'd love to have her on the show.
And if you're not familiar with who she is, Dr. Gunter is an OBGYN, but she also shares a lot of really, really great information about the menopause transition, just a lot of really awesome women's health information from a really educational lens. And we just love her books and basically everything about her. So please, Dr. Gunter. But anyway, okay. So a few weeks back, she shared a post on her Instagram about predatory hormonal therapy offered out of med spas with the goal of, quote, preventing aging. But something she said in her caption, which I'll link in the show notes as well, is that anytime we see the word anti-aging, we should translate in our head to look like a breeder for a patriarchal society. And I can't get enough of that. It's like truly been on repeat in my head since I read it. And it kind of reminds me, if we go back to our sex episode with Dr. Holbrook, with Dr. Celeste, we talked about some of like the flawed beauty industry, right? And how our perception of beauty is being managed by a marketing team. That's how she phrased it. I really love that. If you go back and listen to that podcast, Celeste has some really strong and really great views on taking a harm reduction approach to this pressure. And I love the thoughts from both of these women who like have really strong stances in a great way. But I'm getting off track. Michael, you're supposed to not let me do this.
I know. I'm Sorry, do you know what? I'm actually just fascinated by this topic and I'm really enjoying just listening to you talk. So as people listening to this are going to be like, was Michael in on this episode? I am here. I'm just sitting back and enjoying it. So carry on.
I'm so sorry. Okay, so there's so much we could talk about in terms of like why we value youth. This pressure. Reversing aging. This idea that like is, you know, that's even something we can do. And what I've touched on here is just really tip of the iceberg. But no matter where this pressure is coming from, we want to call it patriarchy, capitalism, whatever you want to name it. It's an impossible task we're working towards. We can neither prevent nor reverse aging. Like, we're all getting older, period. I am older today than I was yesterday, and that is a fact. There's no shortage of purported anti-wrinkle masks and serums, or pills to give you the sex drive of a 20-year-old, or supplements to help you burn fat, surgical procedures, whatever else anti-aging looks like at the moment. And this episode is not about knocking on those. Like, I don't even want to hate on them, even the wildest ones, because I know it's really easy to buy into it, right? Like, there's this overwhelm of messaging and marketing and products, and we're all a little fearful of what the future brings. I get that. I can tell you, I don't know if like having a baby and like that being a marker of age or time, or if it's like turning 30, I don't know what it has been for me, but like this year alone, I've been so concerned about my straw usage. And how much, like, here's my water bottle. It has a straw. Using a straw makes you have mouth wrinkles. Yet it's like I'm torn between, am I going to stay hydrated or am I going to use a straw? Because I don't drink out of a cup. I hate drinking out of a cup. And there's like all this fear mongering about lip wrinkles. Have you ever had any of that? Have you even thought of that, Michael?
No, like I can grow a beard. I can cover up my lip wrinkles. It's fine. This beard is here to stay. It's funny. I was just actually thinking when you were saying that, I think actually, I mentioned that the head shaving was the first thing. I think I was wrong there. I think actually, so doing social media and creating content online, you open yourself up to the lovely people on the internet who are always really kind about the way that you look, and you start to get really overly critical. And I did actually, maybe like a year and a half, 2 years ago, started buying moisturizer with anti-wrinkle and SPF 50 in it as well. I live in Scotland. There's like no daylight, but I've got like SPF 50 moisturizer and stuff because I'm like, oh, I don't want to get all wrinkly as I get old. I feel like I've bought into it. I don't know if it works. I like to credit myself as an evidence-based practitioner, but I've not really looked into the research because I don't know.
We'll talk about that.
Okay, that's good. That's good. So yeah, I've got it here next to me because I've got my swimming stuff next to me. But I use like an SPF 50 moisturizer on my face every day and hoping that I won't look haggard as I move into old age of late 30s, you know?
Right. And I'm only sharing this to say, there's another one that like I've been trying to force myself to sleep on my back because of the like the crepey neck wrinkles that happen if you sleep on your side. I like literally saw a reel on that and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't sleep on my side ever again. Like, I'm sharing this to make it abundantly clear that I'm not immune here. Like, I am not immune.
Me as well. Sure. Like, I need to wear glasses. I could probably get away with not wearing glasses all of the time, but I find that I start frowning a little bit and I'm getting a line in the middle of my eyes. Oh, and I'm like, oh, I'm 11s. Getting like a wrinkle. There we go. So I'm like, oh, that's a bad thing because I can't look like I've got lines on my face. Ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Right. So we're not immune. We feel the pressure and the overwhelm that accompanies it. Like, just like you said, like, is this moisturizer going to help me? I don't know. Because there's a lot going on in the section.
It also costs a lot of money. I'm like, I really hope this is worth it.
Exactly. So doing this episode for me has like kind of really shed light on the fact that I think I buy into this messaging even a lot more than I thought. Michael, have you seen that meme? And it's called The Beauty Industry. And it says, for men, this can be used as shampoo, body wash, face wash, lotion, mouthwash, sunscreen. And for women, we've specially formulated this moisturizer for your left elbow. Have you seen that one?
It's like, yeah, I have seen it. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's really funny. And I feel like that sums up the options regarding like all of these anti-aging products and how absolutely outrageous they can be. Mm-hmm. And like I said, men aren't immune. I don't think that's true at all. But I think anyone identifying as females just gets pushed a little harder and told that age means more and more problems to fix, if anything. So, you know, there are vampire facials and anti-wrinkle straws out there, and there's extreme intermittent fasting protocols being touted.
Hold the phone. What is a vampire facial? I feel like a lot of people listening to this will know what it is, and I'm going to feel silly now. But what's that?
It's, I think you draw out, like you draw a vial of your own blood and then you like put your own blood on your face as a facial. I don't know the details. I know Kim Kardashian does it.
Sounds completely normal. Yep. Continue. Super
normal. There are people eating their placenta for its youth restoring hormones. And I'm not talking postpartum women either. I'm talking others. And others drinking urine to reboot their tissues. These are all things that exist, unfortunately.
I bet you Gwyneth Paltrow has a big section on her website for this.
I didn't even go to Goop for this. But if you haven't heard of Brian Johnson, this mega millionaire biohacker who essentially is living via this youth restoring algorithm, like you've got to give him a Google. Have you heard of him?
No, I don't think I have.
I don't think I had until maybe like I've heard that name, but also his name is Brian Johnson, which just like sounds like anyone's
quite
name,
common,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So just give him a Google and read the lengths he goes to. He basically spends millions on this like youth restoring protocol. And it includes things like penis shockwave therapy and taking over 100 supplements a day. And he's got
do I want to know what penis shockwave therapy is?
I think it's just some like revitalizing. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't actually.
I'm scared to Google this because I'm worried about the retargeted ads.
Wait, there you go. That's actually true. Maybe don't Google him. But his name is Brian Johnson. And he just spends a boatload of money on this anti-aging protocol that he follows. But anyway, I want to, again, I'm not going to hate on anything anyone's out there doing. I just want us to be more conscious of what we consume and what we buy and what we buy into. But I do want to bring some more attention to the scarier and more harmful solutions out there. So have you ever seen an anti-aging clinic or like an ad for it?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
I feel like they're always in the in-flight magazines, you know, like you flip through and then there's all those like mm-hmm. clinics and doctors and stuff. So something I learned in my research for this podcast is that anti-aging medicine is not a specialty that's recognized by the American Board of Medical Specialties. And this, like, that's not surprising because we can't not age, but, you know, but it mm-hmm. means that doctors can't be board certified in age prevention medicine. But also, there's all these age prevention clinics out there. And so this doesn't mean that age prevention private practices don't exist. There's actually this professional society called the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine, and it has 24,000 members in it. And that's actually global. It says American Academy, but it's global.
Does that mean like they're not that well regulated then? Is that
correct? Okay. And it has these certificates in anti-aging medicine that are available for any MD. So I don't know the number of anti-aging clinics out there. From a rough Google search, I would say it's like hundreds to thousands. And these clinics offer treatments that are typically out of pocket, right? So like this isn't insurance covering it. So it's out of pocket. It's quite expensive. This leaves doctors a lot more revenue than managed care going through insurance. So I definitely see the financial incentive, and I'm not out here to say that like every doctor is out here preying on people with this type of medicine, because I know that that can't be true. But also I want to point out that the treatments often offered in this medical setting are riskier than like, oh, some sketchy drugstore wrinkle serum or some mm-hmm. over-the-counter supplement, right? So where this anti-aging craze gets a little more concerning is in the prescribing of hormone cocktails and off-label usage of medications for anti-aging purposes. One you may be a little familiar with is HGH. So HGH, human growth hormone, this is a banned substance, right, in sport. It's something that's produced naturally in our bodies by the pituitary gland. And it's super important as we develop as children and adolescents. But then as we age, HGH declines significantly. So it's FDA approved as an injection for children with growth disorders, as well as adults with deficiency due to an illness or an injury. But sometimes it's used off-label as an attempt to reverse signs of aging, increase muscle mass, and improve bone density. And I get that it sounds great and it sounds like it would work, but the benefits for this off-label usage are really widely debated. Like, we're not actually sure that it does all of this. And the potential side effects include joint pain, abnormal enlargement of the heart, liver and kidney strain, and increased risk of cancer if used long term. And that's just kind of like a short list. There's quite a bit out there. So looping back to that Dr. Gunter post, she was actually talking about HRT, or hormone replacement therapy being offered at med spas and the risk of offering hormones and HRT outside of like a secure medical setting. HGH falls in this category of HRT. So does bioidentical estrogen, DHEA, and other concoctions of different combos of hormones. And I want to add the nuance that like HRT can be a really, really helpful strategy for women going through the menopause transition. So that's kind of something different. We're not really talking about that. We're talking more about using this HRT for an anti-aging remedy and how like maybe we shouldn't do that from a med spa. And I just did a quick Google of anti-aging clinic. I looked at one in Mexico City, one in California, one in Texas. Like I just clicked on the map. That was just totally random. All three offered HGH. All three offered different combos of HRT. So it's out there, right? And it's just something to be conscious of.
Yeah, I think it's quite scary how easy I think it is to access this kind of stuff, even outside of a clinic space. So we are hopefully in this series, if not this series, the next one, I'm going to be doing an episode on steroid use. And I delved into social media to do a bit of research around that, mainly on TikTok, because its search engine is brilliant and it kind of retargets you with videos that you want to see. Now, all I see are videos of people talking about taking and using and selling steroids. And it's really scary how many videos now are being popped up on my feed. I don't know how to make it stop, Kate. If you know, please let me know. Because every time I go on TikTok now, there's like two or three people who are quite big within that space on social media. Their videos constantly pop up talking about their steroid use and how to do it safely, in air quotation marks. And it's just absolutely terrifying that, I mean, these people aren't getting it legally, are they? So it's out there and it's pretty scary.
Right. So like even saying from a med spa is giving a lot of credit because,
yeah, <right.
laughs> you know, you can get these things elsewhere too. So with this goal of us being confident and knowledgeable consumers, here's some quick numbers. The global anti-aging market accounted for $66.7 billion in 2022. It's expected to reach $120 billion. That's almost double, by the way, by 2030. And special thanks to boomers for that growth, right? Like we have this rapidly aging, massive population. Now, I found a lot of conflicting numbers when I was looking for these metrics. So this was like the most solid evidence I found based on product sales. So we're just talking about like creams and shampoos and whatever, right? Like we're not even talking about services or treatments because some numbers I found included services and treatments and were in like the hundreds of billions. But the point is like there's a lot of money being spent here, right? So whether it's the $300 left elbow serum that we talked about in that meme or that LED face mask all over TikTok, most of us are buying into this industry in some way. And I think we can give ourselves some permission to do that while also challenging ourselves a little bit. I think it's okay that we have goals of looking and feeling good in our bodies. Like I don't think we should shame ourselves into thinking that's not a valid way to feel. But I also think that this multi-billion dollar industry and this the beauty TikTok and magazine articles and the anti-aging detoxes, whatever, are a distraction. And a question I keep coming back to throughout all of this research for this episode is, what do we actually want when we think about preventing aging? I'm gonna ask you that. Like, what do you actually want when you think about preventing aging? Is it like fewer fine lines and wrinkles or better blood work or more confidence in your body? Like, what's the actual goal?
I feel like that's shifted over time. I think before I would have answered like fewer wrinkles, maybe a better hairline, you know? Whereas now I think it is like I want to perform and feel better and my like blood work to be good, right? So I think that's shifted over time. I think, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I would love to age and not have loads of wrinkles. Like that's kind of the goal of many people. But I think that becomes less important as I'm keep saying getting older. I'm not old. I'm 33. But as I'm getting older, I feel like I'm not caring as much about that. And maybe that's with having a son now as well. And you kind of start thinking about just you want to be around for as long as possible rather than look good for as long as possible. You know?
Right. Yeah. And I agree. I won't deny that I have like an aesthetic aspect of wanting to look. I think it's like as young as I feel. I think that's like actually normal. Like I feel really healthy and fit and energetic and all that. I want to look like that. But for me, like when I really think about this question, it's like it's far more about feeling capable and confident in my body long term, like doing really cool stuff for as long as possible. Again, go watch NIAID and watch the 64-year-old woman swim 110 miles. Like it just makes you kind of reevaluate what you want out of age, right? Mm-hmm. So I want to flip the script and talk more about healthy aging and longevity, because there's so much uncertainty and pseudoscience and quackery around like age prevention methods, but we actually know what can help us age healthily and promote longevity. Like we know it. We know it, and we overlook it for the other stuff. So healthy aging is the process of maintaining good health and functional ability during older age. So this is aging free of chronic diseases and disability, like literally aging in good health, because age doesn't matter as much if we're like, we're kind of not functioning well, right? Longevity is our lifespan or the time spent alive. And this is dependent on a lot of factors. So socioeconomic status plays a role, sex, lifestyle. Some of that we can't change, but then some of it we can, lifestyle, right? So the average person in the United States lives to be 79. And when we think within the context of healthy aging, how long we live doesn't really matter if we're not living well, right? So I think so often about all of these attempts to increase our lifespan. And I get so hung up on that, like, you know, the billionaires' efforts to keep us living longer, but like so much of the population does not live in good health towards the end of their lives. So I'm like, why are we prolonging this, right? We see us running into these issues with prolonged care and, you know, facilities for caring for elders in poor health. And it's like, well, why are we trying to prolong life instead of health, lifespan over health span, right?
Yeah, I know, I do get that. It's first of all, I also just want to make the point that it always scares me how low the life expectancy is in the US. I know that this is probably an entire podcast episode in itself, but that is worryingly low. Anyway, we're gonna smile awkwardly through that point. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? I think it's just, I don't know, is it social media that's maybe having a bigger impact on that? I know you kind of mentioned about the boomer generation probably being the generation that's really kind of pushing the rise in anti-aging products, services. I feel like social media only over time is only going to lower that number. It's not going to be boomers, it's going to be the millennials and Gen X. Is that the next one? I don't know what all the generation stuff is. Yeah, it's tough.
You know, my education background is in public health, so we're going to start to talk about some public health terms here. But okay. Health span, as opposed to lifespan, health span is like how long we're living in healthy years, right? So years free of disease or disability. And I tried really hard to see if I could find a ranking of countries by health span, you know, for like how many healthy years are we having on average. I couldn't find it globally, but I found it for European countries. And by the way, Sweden, Norway, and Iceland won those. Those are the top three. But the point stands that when we're thinking about preventing aging, we should probably be thinking a little bit more about living as many healthful years as we can, right? Not just as long as we can.
So the current life expectancy for UK in 2023 is just under 82 years old. So a little bit better.
It is. Okay. So
yeah, it doesn't surprise me, those European countries that have the good health span, because I mean, they seem to be countries that are doing it right in terms of healthcare and maybe lifestyle and diet, you know?
Yep. I think when we had asked listeners for suggestions for topics for this season, one of them was like the US health outcomes compared to globally and why it's different. And so that'd be fun to dig into later. But
I think it'd also be cool to do one on like the blue zone as well. Those areas in the world where people have like exceptionally high life expectancy. Watch this space.
I'm going to touch on one of those in just one second. But
cool.
We work in nutrition and fitness, right? Like that's our area of expertise and knowledge. So let's talk about diet and movement, because these two areas make like a big old difference in this talk about healthy aging and longevity, cognitive function, mobility, fitness, lack of disease, disability, all of that. Now, I want to acknowledge that there's a lot of nuance to be had around body weight. We could talk at length about health at every size and issues with BMI on an individual scale. It's all really valid, and that's a different topic for a different time. And the literature does show a correlation between healthy body weight, I'm talking about a classification on the BMI scale here, and healthy aging and longevity. So remember, we're talking about a population-based research here, right? So the BMI scale has errors on an individual level, but there is a lot of benefit on a population-based scale. So that's what we're talking about in this context. Overweight and obesity increase the risk of chronic diseases that in turn decrease lifespan and health span, period. In animal research, we see that caloric restriction actually prolongs longevity. Again, we're talking about animal research here, and it's probably related mostly to the absence of overweight and obesity. We don't have confirmation that's necessarily the case in humans, but Okinawans, those from Okinawa, Japan, have a really interesting population. I haven't read or watched the Blue Zones documentaries and all of that. I know to an extent what they are, and I believe this is one of the populations looked at. I'm not totally sure on that.
I believe so. I'm sorry if I got this wrong, but I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So Okinawans eat relatively low calorie intake and have extremely long lifespans. So studying this population shows little weight gain with age and a lifelong low BMI alongside low risk for mortality from age-related diseases. This is just a hypothesis, but it is an interesting population to look at because they have one of the world's highest populations of 100-year-olds. And that's always pretty cool.
So yeah. The five blue zones where the world's healthiest, in quotation marks, people live, Ikaria in Greece. I apologize if I'm butchering any of the location names here. Okinawa in Japan, Ogliastra region in Sardinia, Loma Linda in California, and Nicoya Peninsula in Costa Rica. So
wow.
Those are the five zones. Cool. Yeah.
There you have it. We'll talk about that later. That's another episode.
Yeah.
Now, I really want to make it clear we're not talking about significant calorie restriction here, right? So there's a difference between significant calorie restriction and the absence of eating in a surplus. We know that on the flip side, like too low of a body fat percentage increases the risk of osteoporosis, lowers bone density, increases risk of infection, delays recovery and healing. Like there are major concerns on the flip side. But in terms of our nutrition, we can promote healthy aging longevity with a balanced diet. Avoiding weight cycling. Weight cycling refers to like gaining and losing weight over time a ton, which leads to a pretty increased risk of chronic health conditions. Eating lots of whole foods, as they're high in antioxidants and polyphenols, something that we've touched on in past episodes, and really monitoring alcohol intake. So I want to really stress, we have this evidence that caloric restriction can be beneficial. We know it's true in animals. We're not sure. It's just a hypothesis as far as humans go. But we do know that carrying excess weight has health implications, and especially weight cycling as well, or gaining and losing like kind of the same amount of weight over and over. Those really impact our healthy aging and longevity. And, you know, it's a touchy topic because there's a lot to be said about it, right? There are metabolically healthy overweight individuals that exist, but I think this generalization also can be something that we can acknowledge. I don't know. What do you think, Michael?
I think you're right there. I think, in terms of the BMI scale, we could bang on about its flaws for a long time, I think. I think also we have to be sensitive, is maybe the right word, of the demographics in terms of BMI scale. Like it is very broad recommendations for the entire population, whereas different areas of those populations probably sit in a slightly different range. But yes, if we have to look at BMI scale in terms of the entire population, there is correlation there, and the research, that's what it proves. Like there's no kind of skirting around that issue.
Absolutely. And like, you know, we could make this a 10-hour episode and talk about socioeconomic impacts and you know, all of that, but I'm just trying to kind of distill it down to what is manageable for us today. So we have this information, and then we have people like millionaire Brian Johnson taking 100 supplements a day. The list is very long and complicated. And just side note, one that caught my eye is Broccomax. He takes something called Broccomax, and it looks like it's just broccoli extract. Like, bro, eat some broccoli.
It's funny. You mentioned the calorie restriction, and the one, and it's mostly in animal studies, like this is one that you see a lot around intermittent fasting advocates, people that sell intermittent fasting packages, is they will claim that, look at this research paper, it shows that caloric restriction prolongs life. And all the time they are quoting animal research. The research is so limited within human populations. So that's just something to always kind of keep in mind when you see someone banging on about the benefits of intermittent fasting or making very wild claims about a certain diet approach?
There's a lot to be said about intermittent fasting in this anti-aging space. And I actually, like, you know, I had to really pick and choose what we're talking about here today, but we had talked about making that a whole episode. So I was hoping that we could touch on that later in more depth. So there's a lot of information. It's confusing. It's overwhelming. But I wanted to talk about some supplements we do know that can help us in this pursuit of healthy aging and longevity. And I think that's exciting. It feels exciting to me because it, like, often we're just like, supplements, and don't worry about them. But, like, let's talk about really optimizing this goal of healthy aging and longevity.
Let me guess. Number one, Brocco Max.
It's not Brocco Max.
Damn it.
Believe it or not. There's really interesting preliminary research that shows that cocoa extract can provide benefits for longevity by increasing blood flow and oxygenation in the brain. In the show notes, I'm going to link to the Examine page on cocoa extract for you to dig into that more. It was very interesting. And I saw about four different variations of cocoa extract on bazillionaire Brian Johnson's supplement list. I'm not sure if that means anything good or bad.
The issue with this is people that eat dark chocolate are already insufferable, Kate, of telling you how healthy dark chocolate is. This is only going to give them more fuel to the fire of their smugness.
Totally, because the Examine page says, or eat dark chocolate. So
damn it.
Okay, another supplement that's of most interest for healthy aging is protein powder for sarcopenia. Sarcopenia is the loss of muscle mass and strength, and we know that that's more related to adequate protein, right? Adequate protein intake overall. So if you need protein supplementation to help you get there to a place of adequate protein intake, then do it. Go for it. Use it. Certain B vitamins have also been found to reduce some cognitive decline, but that's kind of where the helpful supplement list stops. And
what a surprising, it's so short.
Right? Yeah. And I think we could safely say that you could meet all those needs with like a healthful, balanced diet, right?
Yeah, but which doesn't sound as sexy though, does it?
Exactly. I was just going to say, which is both exciting and boring. And I don't know if those two can be true at the same time, but it feels like they are. It's both exciting and boring that dietary recommendations that support healthy aging and longevity are the ones we already know. Like, there is no secret hiding out. There's no solution like locked in a treasure chest under a rainbow. Like, it's basic principles we already know.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm glad that the list is quite short there, just to annoy a lot of people who sell the products outside of that list, including expensive broccoli extract. The research around, once again, just a side note, you might go into this, I apologize if you are, Kate, around maintaining muscle mass into old age and life expectancy, life longevity is so interesting. And I think if more people were aware of that research, more people would lift weights. More people would put a strong emphasis on lifting weights, especially into older age.
Well, let's talk about it. What a good segue.
Sorry, I apologize for stepping on your toes, Kate.
Perfect. I have to special mention that, like, I didn't even have time to talk about collagen in this episode. I wanted to talk about collagen so bad. And both, like, dietary collagen and collagen products. And if you, like, want to just read a kind of funny class action lawsuit, there's currently one going on against L'Oreal and some moisturizing product with collagen in it. And I went down a whole rabbit hole there, but, you know, alas, there's no time for that today.
So to just really do it short, like, if a collagen supplement, thumb up or thumb down as a general recommendation?
I would pass.
Cool. Okay. Thumb down. I like it.
I think it's not going to help us as much as we think.
Cool.
Dietary protein, or if you're looking for protein supplementation, do it from a complete protein, like whey, pea protein, plant-based, whatever. But it's just going to add a little more benefit than the collagen itself. So let's go into movement. Exercise? It's awesome. We know it. It's about as close as we can get to slowing the effects of aging. Like, it's truly one of the most, the most important thing here.
Big claim.
It truly helps us reduce the risk of chronic disease. And we're looking at benefits such as positive cognitive changes, improved heart function, better strength, mobility, balance, literally making our bodies more adaptable to the physiological stress of aging itself. And these benefits come from regular exercise over time, not waiting until later in life, although I would say there's not a wrong time to start. And when we look at the literature on exercise and age, so much of it boils down to, I mean, benefits in both cardiovascular training and resistance training, but a lot of it shows this really cool impact of increasing telomere length. So telomeres are the cellular structures that protect our chromosomes from degrading. And as we age, our telomeres shorten. But exercise can not just reduce the shortening, but lengthen our telomeres. So like we've spent this whole time talking about how we cannot like reverse aging, yet here we have this proven on a cellular level, proven to essentially undo some of the signs of aging or something that happens with age. So when we talk about exercise, we're not just talking about, you know, cardiorespiratory benefits or more muscle mass or more bone density or more mobility or better balance. Like we're literally talking about positive changes at a cellular level. And that is so cool. And it goes back to what you're talking about with benefits of resistance training. Like those go so far beyond aesthetics, how we feel, into our cellular function and our cognitive function as well. And that's so cool.
Yeah, it's really, really cool.
So let's talk about what else we can do, because I think we could talk about exercise and nutrition a lot. And I don't know, there's so much we don't know, then there are these things we do know. And so we've got to talk about them. We can get enough sleep. I know it's so boring. We can loop back to your sleep episode, which was not boring, by the way.
I was going to say, boring? Come on.
We can loop back to that episode. I can't remember what number it was at the end of our last season, for the myriad of reasons that sleep impacts longevity, from brain function to hormone regulation, disease prevention. We can manage our stress. I would say poor sleep is a stressor. So those two kind of go hand in hand. And I won't lie, this is forever the most annoying suggestion to me, because I'm like, okay, what do you want me to do? Like, not have a kid and not work. But we know that that relates to some things that we can change. There are uncontrollable stressors and there are controllable stressors. We can wear sunscreen. You've got it, Michael. You're doing it.
Yes. It's worth the 25 quid a pot or whatever it is.
Sun exposure is great. It really is. You know, hooray for vitamin D. But sun damage accelerates skin aging. And sunscreen protects against this UV damage. So here we're talking about both aesthetic benefits. You know, we do care about wrinkle prevention. We've both made that clear. And preventing vascular damage and the risk of skin cancer. And I was actually going to ask you, Michael, do you wear sunscreen every day? But you're doing it.
Yeah, I do. And do you know what? I would get through the pot twice as fast if I didn't have a beard, which is kind of good. So the pot lasts a bit longer because you can't really moisturize your beard with sunscreen. Yeah. Feels a bit weird. Although now I've got no hair, I have to go up a bit higher. So we're maybe like 2/3 better off than I was before. Yeah, I do. I like wearing sunscreen. I know I live in Scotland and we get very, very limited sunlight. But yeah, I think the impact of sun damage, I think, is pretty well known now. So even if it has the slightest impact, I'm happy.
Yeah. And you know, it matters even when it's cloudy. So good job. You're doing a great job.
Thanks, Kate. Thank you.
We can stimulate our brains, which I've always felt like correlates with doing Sudoku. Like, have you heard about like Sudoku and aging? But it also means, you know, reading and conversation and socialization. And interestingly enough, there's actually no evidence to support that Sudoku or crosswords decrease cognitive decline. So womp womp.
That's a shame.
But we do know that cognitive engagement can be a buffer from decline. So it's kind of semantics there. It's good for you.
So it just kind of like maintains things rather than improves it? Is that kind of the... Yeah. Okay.
Actually, it's like there's a lot of correlation between people with better cognitive ability doing the Sudoku and crosswords. So it's kind of convoluted, but I think there's nothing to suggest that it's negative. You know,
so it's just an opportunity for smart people to tell other people how smart they are. I love doing a Sudoku, but I'm not very good at them. I guess it's just a practice thing, but I always wish I was better at them than I am.
Exercise the brain. That's what we're saying. Okay. Whatever way you want to.
Yeah.
So I am not obtuse to the fact that sleep and stress management and protein intake are like far more boring suggestions than an anti-aging detox protocol or some face mask from an infomercial. Like, I get it. I get it. And I don't know, Michael, what do we do here? Like, how do we make moderation more appealing than the extremes? I think that's like our life's pursuit at this point.
We make really silly videos on Instagram and TikTok where we're dancing whilst trying to provide educational content just to keep up with the loop of social media. Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? And I know that people always want an approach that sees results quick. Like, people want to see that stuff's happening. So when you're telling people, like, stick with this for years and it's going to help you. It's so tough to sell that. Yeah, I don't know. I've got an inflatable avocado costume, inflatable aubergine, sorry, eggplant costume as well. So we can both dance together. Actually, saying that, me and Kate are going to hopefully meet in person if flights and everything all work out. We're going to be meeting in Valencia. When I go to do my Ironman 70.3, I will bring the inflatable costumes, Kate, and we will dance whilst telling people sleep hygiene.
I've avoided it for so long, but I guess it's time. So, you know, I'm just trying to think of like, how do we encourage these supportive habits, like movement? You know, we've talked about extensively over kind of more frivolous spending on products and treatments. And I don't want the takeaway here to be shaming us for buying into the anti-aging hype. Like, that's not it. That's not what we're doing here. We're not here to shame. We have big forces at work, like billions of dollars shoved in our faces telling us like, this is what we need. And it's not bad of us to think that we should resist aging when we've been told since we're 18 or 20 or, you know, who knows what age, from a young age, you know, younger, since we've been exposed to this this type of information. So really, I want us to think about how we can redirect some of our energy and resources and money and time to think about these things that actually help us live a long and healthful life. Like, how can we figure out what we actually want in terms of longevity? I think you and I have tried to clarify that for ourselves a little bit more. And then how can we align ourselves more with what's going to make that happen? Because I think when we ask ourselves that question, like, what do I want out of the end years of my life? The aesthetics may take a backseat to our performance and how we feel and how capable we are in our bodies. So how do we, you know, pull ourselves out of this either or? Because I'm not suggesting we dismiss our aesthetic goals and ditch our skincare. I love my skincare routine, so I will not be doing that. It's like, it's really cool to imagine some alternate universe where we kind of boycott the beauty industry, but let's be reasonable. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's never going to happen, isn't it? It's so easy, isn't it, to kind of bang the drum about how damaging this stuff is and then blame people for following it. But I don't think that's helpful at all, because let's be honest, society shows greater value and helps people up who are younger, who look prettier, who are slimmer. Like, and then to criticize people for trying to conform to that to make their lives easier, I just don't think is a helpful narrative at all. So we are solely putting the blame here on those big companies that absolutely take the mickey out of us and make us spend our hard-earned money to make very little, if any, changes at all. So yeah, it's a really tough balance to find, isn't it?
You know, I think maybe what our role is assessing our idea of how we want to age and then figuring out what's going to impact that longevity most, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I like my Botox. I do get Botox. I freaking love Botox.
We've not spoken about this yet, actually. That's true, a new one. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You can't throw this into the end of the episode, Kate. Come on.
Right. We're running out of time.
Yeah.
I've been getting Botox for quite a few years and I really enjoy it. That's why I see, you know, your 11s you're showing. I don't have those.
There we go. But it's not, I know. Weird. I've got the smile lines next to my eyes. I've got the line in between. I don't care that anyone does this at all. I have no judgment or like compliment for people that use it. I'm just always quite intrigued. The thought of it kind of scares me, that you're putting a toxin in your face. And I think that's why I would never do it, because I'm a wimp. I don't know. It does intrigue me though.
That's fair. I will tell you, and I can't believe this hasn't made it into the episode, because this is probably a huge precursor for why I want to talk about this topic. I am obsessed with plastic surgery. Not getting it. I have no desire whatsoever. But since I can remember, I remember being like probably like 8, the Discovery Health Channel has like all these plastic surgery shows. Like, I have seen every episode of every one. I would say a good several dozen of the people I follow on Instagram are plastic surgery accounts. I have watched every episode of Botched in both English and Spanish. I like to watch it in Spanish too. I find it so fascinating. Like, I can never get over how wild it is. It's like, I don't know.
I'm so intrigued at the psychology of this, because I'm trying to think of it on like a broader scale of how probably these companies have championed to have their programs put on TV to like normalize all of these like brutal procedures that people are getting. Once again, not going to devalue why someone ever wants to go down that route. I get it. We all have hang-ups. And if that's the way that makes you feel better, awesome. You do that. But I do I'm intrigued by that, Kate, and I feel like we need a psychologist on this episode to talk about why we find this so interesting.
I would love to know. And so if you ever watched Botched, in every episode they have kind of like three cases they look at. And one is someone who maybe had an accident, like a car accident or something, and has, you know, cosmetic surgery needs or desires, I guess, you know. Maybe they're functioning, but sometimes maybe they have like deviated septum. They can't breathe well. They need a rhinoplasty to help with that. And then usually another case is like purely aesthetic, whether it's like breast augmentation or whatever. And then usually there's a third person who has like an addiction to cosmetic surgery or plastic surgery. And I just find myself like so wildly fascinated by all of it. You know, the ability we have to change the structure of someone's face with surgery that's kind of like art in a way, you know, like you're kind of creating a structure and the people in it just for the aesthetics and then the like far end. Anyway, we've really deviated here now.
I feel like this is another future topic. This episode has just been us discovering topics we want to talk about in future episodes. Wow.
Oh, I think I said I like my Botox. I do. I like my Botox, but Botox has no impact on my healthy aging and my longevity in a way that my nutrition choices or drinking habits or sleep patterns do, right? So I think, you know, maybe this is my call to action. Can our takeaway be what do we want in terms of our aging and how can we reallocate some of our resources to get there? Can we do that while acknowledging the push to slower aging is very great? Like we are getting a lot of pressure and allow ourselves to lean into that a little bit, but not let that be our whole definition of what age is. Because I think a point we're missing is that age is a privilege. Like it's a very, very big privilege to age, and aging is natural. And if we focus on our health span and our longevity and healthy aging, if we think more about proven self-care methods and less about like the anti-aging hype, we're setting ourselves up for better years ahead, as opposed to more shallow pursuits, I think.
I think that's very true. I had this thought process actually when I went to go shave my head a couple of months ago. There was a moment I was like, oh, shave my head because I'm losing my hair. And then I had this moment of, oh, I've had really close friends who haven't made it this far in life and I'm really caring about having to shave my hair off. Like it just feels so tiny, like such a small issue in comparison. And that's, I think, yeah, if we can slowly shift our thought process into that, easier said than done, granted, but I think if we can try and frame things like that, it kind of gives us a bit more perspective. And I mean, just look at the awful crap in the world that's going on right now, you know, like how big an issue is the issue that we think we have truly?
Right. Especially when we actually have the tools and knowledge to have that privilege to age.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we need to not ignore everything else, but give a little less attention and focus more on those controllables rather.
Well said.
Well, good talk. I have about 20,000 more things I'd like to talk about, but this might be our longest episode yet. So you have some editing to do, Michael.
No, I think I want to keep it all in. I think it's a really cool conversation topic. And as always with these episodes, we welcome your feedback. We'd be intrigued to hear your thoughts on aging in general and how maybe you're approaching it or the struggles you have. And we want to open these discussions up and we can shift them over to social media and have them there as well. So reach out to either Kate on KL Nutrition on Instagram or me. So it's Michael Ujoa PT on Instagram and let us know. We welcome it.
Yeah, and I just want to throw out there, if you're listening on Spotify, we have a feature, a little Q&A box at the end, and maybe we'll just change that little prompt to say, hey, what are your thoughts on this episode? Because I'd love to hear from listeners and what you thought, what you agree with, what you disagree with, because I think there are some controversial topics that we kind of touched on a little bit, and there's a lot to say and a lot of nuance to add. So I'd love to keep the conversation going.
Cool. Thank you so much, Kate. Brilliant episode. Thanks. And yeah.
And for this season 2 of How To Fitness, we'll be putting out an episode every other Monday. I'm just giving us a little bit more time to research and write our deep dives. So we'll catch you in 2 weeks. And thanks for listening.